You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beej, the optimistic newbie developer. Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. This week, we have a special guest on the show. John Sonmez is a Pluralsight author, blogger, and podcast host. He is author of Soft Skills, the Software Developer's Life Manual, and founder of Simple Programmer, where he focuses on helping IT professionals improve their careers and live better lives. He's here to join us in a discussion on overcoming social awkwardness. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
Well, I tore the server room apart this weekend, and I set up...
Yes, you did.
Yeah, it's bad. But I got FreeNAS set up on the server now, so we have some ridiculous number of terabytes of storage now. So I did all that, and then, of course, I get in there today, and, like, today has been a comedy of errors. Like, nothing's working. You know, Comcast went out, the server had an issue with the motherboard. You know, it's all fixed now, but... Yeah, that's what I've been doing. That, and I'm recovering from soreness from helping you move.
Yeah, I do have some heavy furniture.
Yeah, you do, man. So, how about you? Or let's ask John.
What have I been fighting? Let's see. I've been fighting. The biggest thing I think I've been fighting is I just moved to California, and I'm trying to like figure out all the ways that California needs to tax me so that I can, you know, reveal my rear to them in the proper way. So I'm trying to jump through all the legal. I'm talking to accountant, asset protection specialist, and just trying to like figure this all out so I can be legitimate. So that's what I'm fighting, really, you know.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And then, of course, my own inner demons is I'm doing a crazy workout program. So I'm like, you know, I ran like 13.1 miles yesterday, and I just got back from the gym and working out 2 hours. So I'm running like 40 something miles a week and hitting the gym like 3 times a week for 2 hours. And so I'm fighting my own, you know, inner demons that are telling me, stop, this is, don't do this. So yeah, that's my battle.
Yeah, we're about to, Beej and I are going to be starting back working out again before too much longer. You know, I've got the home gym just about right. And of course, he lives like 10 minutes away. So we're hopefully soon.
Well, the timing for this episode is kind of interesting for me as, speaking of social awkwardness, I had a date this past Saturday, but, got stood up. It's not too bad though. I have a couple of more dates this week with different people. So, you know, also the bartender only charged me for the appetizer price for my food. He told me he'd gotten stood up earlier in the week and understood.
Takes the wins you get, man.
Yeah, exactly. Still unpacking from the move. Got my bedroom and office set up and just have the living room and kitchen left. It's been a while since I've lived in an apartment. So my first morning there last week, I had to take a cold shower because I didn't realize that the plumbers had installed the shower controls backwards. So cold is hot and hot is cold.
I've done that. And I've taken the cold shower instead of doing the simple like troubleshooting step of let me try the other handle.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, if it makes you feel any better, when I moved into this place, I didn't have hot water for like a week.
I believe that. Yeah.
It was.
So, and like, finally, I started using Spark People, talking about working out and stuff, about 6 weeks ago to kind of help me track my food and workouts. And so far, I've lost 8 pounds. No real diet, just eating healthier and tracking nutrition and exercise. But speaking of exercise, I have something interesting for IoTs this week. So let's go ahead and roll the music. This week for IoTs, I have a fun little product called MyoWare, and this is a Kickstarter project. I actually found it on Amazon while I was looking up a birthday present for my niece. It's a wearable muscle sensor platform. It's Arduino compatible, and you can use it to control robots, prosthetics, video games, and all sorts of other stuff. The really cool thing is there's even an LED shield that will show the strength of your flex. And you don't even need the Arduino or external power to test your strength. So, you know, when Will and I start working out in the next week or two, I'm going to have to get one of these.
You mean when you start?
Well, working out together. All right, so who's talking to us this week?
Well, we got a Twitter comment from Anthony Branzi. Bronze? I'm not sure how you pronounce it in regards to our apprenticeship episode. This is at Complete Dev Pod, accepting applications for Complete Dev Pod Apprentice coming soon, I hope. Beej, you had the best intro into development.
Well, we really do appreciate the comment, and send us a private message on Twitter, because we've got some Complete Developer swag just for you. And if you'd like your very own Complete Developer swag, leave us a review in iTunes or comment on the website or any of our social media. We post all our episodes to Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and LinkedIn. This episode started out as one on dating and overcoming shyness, about 6 months ago?
Yeah, at least.
And we really didn't like the direction that that episode was heading when we were recording it. That ultimately led to our episode on conflict resolution.
Yeah, that's how bad it got.
There you go. Well, almost all the relationships end up in conflict resolution anyway, so, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it's kind of like if you ski long enough, you'll eventually have a brain injury. You'll eventually hit a tree and die. That's like, or if you ride a motorcycle long enough, you'll eventually end up underneath the car. It's, you know, it's just a matter of time.
Don't tell me that.
Yeah, he rides a motorcycle.
Yeah, and Will, you met John at a conference a few months back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was MicroConf. That was one of those, like, you walk in the elevator and you look at somebody's name tag and you're like, no way. Really? Because, I think I had just, gone through one of his Pluralsight videos, on the plane.
Yeah.
So.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, both Will and I listened to the episode where you were on .NET Rocks, and we both came to the same conclusion.
Yeah. We both had exactly the same reaction to exactly the same part of the conversation. So,
yeah, we just knew exactly what we were wanting to talk to you about when we had the chance to bring you on to the show and talk to you. That is social awkwardness, shyness, things like that.
So, yeah, a lot of people are introverts and they find it very difficult to be around people, even people they like. It can be pretty draining. I know that's been my experience with introversion.
So it's kind of funny. So the way that I tend to look at things is I don't really like the boxes. I don't like to put people in boxes. It's useful to evaluate certain situations, but what I like to think about is that it's context-based, right? So I think that people are introverted or extroverted based on the context in the environment they're in, who they're with, and in different stages of their life. So in my own life, right, I've definitely been, as a kid, I was extremely shy, right? I was afraid to talk to people. I was, very socially awkward, I guess I would say, right? But as I learned to overcome that, now you might say that I'm the complete opposite, right? I just love to be around people. I love to go on stage and talk to a crowd of people and to get out there. And so it's a shift. That's why I think, I think really that personalities themselves are very dynamic. We get to kind of decide who we want to be and then be that person. But I think there's actually a really good book on this called Mindset. Yep. That kind of the psychology of success, and it talks about this more so in the idea of intelligence, but I think it's very much applies to personality.
Yeah, we probably need to put a link to that in the show notes, because that is a pretty good book. Probably useful, I guess, at this point to talk about the unintended consequences of social awkwardness. The big one is the awkward silences and conversations that don't have a good flow. That's the obvious immediate consequences. That sense of wanting to avoid social situations, which is something I struggle with a lot. If I've been around a lot of people, I have a limit, I guess.
So yeah, so one thing that I found, you know, with my, which I've made a kind of turn with my YouTube audience, I get a lot of feedback and comments, you know, emails and stuff from my audience on, especially on YouTube. And, you know, it's the demographic of IT people, software developers, it generally, you know, it's no secret that it's somewhere around, you know, 19 to 35 year old men mostly, you know, not that it's not more than that, but, and you can guess, you know, probably what their number one problem as far as social awkwardness is, which is
talking to women.
Exactly. So that's something that I've definitely tried to help a lot of my audience with. I've done kind of video series on this. I've actually gone up and said, look, here, I'm going to go do it. There's three girls standing there on the beach. I'm going to go film it, right? And talk to them. But yeah, so I think, you know, to answer your question, like where does it cause problems? It's, well, you know, I think that some guys that are not able to accomplish this thing that they want so badly in life, it becomes a real sore spot and really becomes a focus point of their life and kind of can make them miserable, honestly, like from what I've seen from long emails and stuff. And so, you know, I think if you can overcome social awkwardness, not only are you going to be able to, you know, accomplish your romantic goals in life, but you're going to be able to talk to other people and just be more successful. So I sort of look at it from the perspective of, I see what your biggest pain is. Let me help you there. And then that's going to help you in the rest of your life.
I would agree with that. I mean, you know, I know, you know, I used to be a lot more socially awkward probably, you know, through high school and college. Well, you know, Beej and I were roommates in college, and it's kind of, yeah. I was extremely awkward back then, and that it overshadowed everything else in my life. And yeah, it was miserable. It's like, no matter what you accomplish, it's nothing at that point.
I'm not quite sure what happened to you, but you were super awkward. I went away for a few years, and when I came back, you were married.
Yeah.
There you go.
That did well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a long story. You know, at that point, maybe it's a good time to talk about some strategies for overcoming awkwardness.
Yeah. So I can definitely give you some if you're interested.
Yeah.
That'd be great. So, yes.
So I think one of the biggest things, this is kind of an interesting, I was talking about, you know, especially in having success with the ladies is having confidence, right? And confidence is a tough one, because confidence is something you cannot fake. You can fake a lot of things in life, right? And fake it till you make it, I'm all about that, but confidence you can't. So it kind of comes down to, like, you're going to be socially awkward until you have confidence, right? Because you're going to be perceived that way and you're going to perceive yourself that way. But how do you get that confidence, right? And so this is where I think the prime strategy, and it's why it's such a high barrier for most people, is courage. and there's no way around this. This is like the barrier that's like, you have to pay this price. You have to pay the price of putting it on the line. You have to pay the price of overcoming your fear and just being courageous. And you can't be courageous unless there's fear. So there's no shortcut. There's no hack. And so basically what I usually suggest, this is kind of a homework assignment for anyone that's listening that is interested in really overcoming social awkwardness, go to the mall and go and talk to 50 women, if you're a guy, right? Or 50 people, you could do that. And just talk to them, 50 of them, right? Don't even evaluate. Don't even say, well, not this one, but that one. You just go up and say, hey, what's going on? Or you try different things, right? And it's very scary, very, very scary to do this. But you do one of them, it's going to be really scary. You're going to be like shaking. You're going to look like a dork. You're going to feel like a dork. You're going to be a dork. You do it in the second one. You're still gonna be sweating, right? But you're gonna have at least a little shred of confidence because you did this once before. And you get through. If you get through the day, and you do 50 of these, oh man, you can probably conquer it in one day. Now I'm not saying that you're gonna suddenly become a social butterfly and become, you know, the most popular person at a party or something like that. But you're going to now have confidence, because confidence is all about knowing the outcome of things, right? If you think about it, like, I'm confident in my decision. What does that mean? It means that I know what the outcome will be. And once you know the outcome with certainty, you have confidence. And once you have confidence, you'll project confidence. So the only way to accomplish that is to go do something a bunch of times until you can be guaranteed to know the outcome.
I like that answer. That's kind that was sort of my approach, actually.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Chris, I don't suffer from social awkwardness. I used to be a bit more awkward, but I think that's a great approach for a lot of things, though.
Definitely.
You need confidence in.
You got to kind of be not afraid to fail, right? It's like, you're going to mess up. I mean, gosh, I was so shy. I was so awkward and like, I couldn't, you know, whatever. But then I just started doing it and I looked dumb. And I always talk about this idea of don't be afraid to look like an idiot. And it's true. You just don't be afraid. Like there's an arbitrage situation here, a real serious arbitrage situation, which is basically this. In these kind of social situations, right? You have very little to lose, but you have huge amounts to gain. And you don't realize that, but I mean, if you shift it into like a financial realm or an opportunity realm, you're missing out. Like there's just this very small downside, right? What's the worst that could happen, right? But the best that could happen is really, really, really good. So you've got to kind of, you know, that to encourage you to get out there and overdo it. And I think a lot of people identify, they self-identify, they say, I am socially awkward.
Yeah.
You know, if you're using that kind of language, what you should do is you should say, in the past, I have been socially awkward. You're not identifying yourself as that thing because what you tell yourself you are. So you can change your attributes at will. You can become what you want to become. You're not cast into a mold. There's a real good, actually, a book on this called Psycho-Cybernetics. It's written by a plastic surgeon called, his name is Dr. Maxwell Maltz, and it's been updated a few times since then. But it is a really, really good book on self-image and how that we can never be more than what we see ourselves as. So we have to actually change how we see ourselves in order to change ourselves.
That was definitely part of the journey for me, was getting over that, basically coming up with reasons why somebody won't like you. Because, I mean, they could do that for themselves if they're going to. And like getting past that thing of, oh, well, they're not going to like me because I'm this or that. And that's a powerful technique.
Yeah. And you can come up with all kinds of reasons. And typically, you know, you end up creating these self-fulfilling prophecies because confidence is attractive to most people, right? So how can you get the confidence? Well, it's going to be from getting out there and like getting stepped on a few times and making mistakes and getting some hard knocks. But then, you know, you can have confidence in that if you continue to do that, you will eventually grow. Like you're a human being. You have a really advanced brain. It adapts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like,
we're fountains, not statues.
Yeah. Exactly. So I liked what you said about the getting over the worst case scenario. Cause I think that's something that, at least in the instances that I've had in my life, was a problem of overthinking things or thinking what's the worst that could happen.
There's actually some good, you know, one thing that, you know, some of the people in the in the pickup artist community kind of coined, but it's useful just in all life in general, is the 3-second rule. This idea that like when you see someone or you want to do something, you have to approach in 3 seconds. You have to go and you don't have time to talk yourself out of it. You don't have time to think about it, and you don't have time to lose your nerve. You just do it. And once you start training yourself to do that, you're able to execute.
I like that a lot. So I guess probably it's a good time to talk about the confirmation bias cycle and how that kind of works and how to break it.
Just for the audience, I kind of had looked up a few things to help us out in the conversation here. And one thing that I found was breaking the confirmation bias cycle. And it's easy to believe the worst about yourself. You can become your own worst critic. You have to understand that you are worth knowing. You are someone who is worth socializing with, and that you have a value to add to a conversation or a friendship.
Right. Yeah. And I would totally agree, because every single person, right, we're all unique. We all have a different background. When I talk to developers about blogging and they say, well, you know what, I don't know anything more than someone else, or, you know, I'm just starting and stuff. I tell them, well, you know, you might be able to teach someone or help someone in a different way because you have that background that someone else doesn't have. But it applies here too, right? But I would also say that with that, you have to, you kind of have to shift the mindset, because if you're focused, so what a lot of, you know, I hate to use the term nice guys, but what a lot of nice guys or nice, quote, nice, you know, people do who are overly polite and overly self-conscious, what they tend to do is actually quite selfish. And this seems really backwards and weird, but I'll explain it here. So if you're focused on yourself, right, how do other people perceive me? What do they think about me? Am I looking dumb right now? Am I sounding dumb? It's actually very selfish. It seems like you're trying to help other people, right? It seems like, well, I'm going to get out of this person's way, or I'm going to go buy some flowers, or I'm going to, you know, go do all these things to impress people or to make them, to do things for them. But what you're really doing in that situation, at least most of us that have kind of gone through this, is you're actually, if you're being honest with yourself, you're being really selfish because you're trying to get something from another person and you care what they think. You're trying, whether it be approval, right? Or a date or whatever it is, you're trying to get something. But when you shift it and you shift the focus, not on you and not how you feel and what, you know, how you're being perceived, but you shift the focus to, and you come into a social situation and say, hey, how could I make this person have a great time? how could I not care what they think about me, but care about if they're having a good time or not, if they're, you know, if they're enjoying themselves? How could I make them not feel socially awkward? When you make that shift, now all of a sudden things are a little bit different. Now you're not selfish. Now you're a giving person. You're a fun person to be around and you're not self-conscious. So I think that one of the keys is to make that shift, is just to start saying, okay, do not think internally, think externally. Think about the other people that are around you and how can you be the most entertaining to them? How can you make them feel at home, make them feel good? How can you, you know, bring some value to the conversation and not worrying about what other people think of you? Because we can get really wrapped up in what do other people think of me, but when we stop caring, and this applies more than just social situations, but especially if you want to be an entrepreneur or you want to put anything out on the internet, you should really stop caring what other people think. Because if you care, trust me, it'll bury you. It'll crush you. It'll kill you. You'll hide under your desk. You'll cry. You gotta have a thick skin and not care. You know, you know intrinsically that you have value as a human being. We all do, because you see it in other humans. And so just bring that forth. Just don't worry. Don't worry about how you're going to be perceived. Don't worry about all these things. Just say, there's value. How can I add value? How can I give, as opposed to, you know, what can I get, or how can I manipulate the situation?
Yeah.
Very well said. Yeah. That's probably a much clearer way than the way I kind of backed into that myself. Because I started realizing that I was being nice to try to get a result. And obviously that doesn't really get anywhere. You know, it's almost like an economic system where instead of providing a good that somebody wants to buy, you're trying to run a scam so that you get money. It's like that difference in perspective. It's just and you don't want to put it in economic terms, but it kind of felt like that.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
Oh yeah, there's a term for it, which is actually called an implicit contract.
Yes, covert contract.
Yeah. Yep. It means this. It means like, well, you know, if I, you know, like I'll totally put it in guy terms again, but like if I write this girl a love letter declaring my absolute love for this girl that I don't really know, but you know, I say I'm going to be awesome and dedicated and you're the best thing in the world. Well, then, well, she must appreciate that, right? And that's the part of the contract that is the implicit. It's like when you're doing that, when you think you're giving a gift, when you think you're like being super nice, or like I'm not gonna be a jerk like these other jerks. I'm gonna be like bend over backwards and do everything for this person, whether it be a girl or not, right? It's an implicit contract that says in exchange for this, you're going to appreciate me. Yep. And so that's an obligation. And where we get into trouble is when we ever, you know, if you notice that the times that when you feel bad about a situation, it's when someone's obligated you. And so when you create those implicit contracts, those covert contracts, you are obligating someone. And when you create an obligation, you do not create the desired result, which is attraction, whether it be, again, in a physical relationship or would be in a business relationship. Obligation does not equal attraction.
Yeah, I actually heard a story today about a local business that a friend was about to do some work for, and they actually backed out of the contract because this individual was trying to get them to like cut the price in half because they're a nonprofit. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, you should do this. And they were kind of putting that obligation on them. And of course, you know, my buddy just was like, nope, and just bailed, you know, but.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Of course, I remember in high school, I was head over heels for this girl who lived next door to my best friend. I actually used to go over to his house just so that I could see her when she came home from work.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. That's what you sound like when you, yeah, exactly. When you're fawning over someone and you're, yep, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I missed so many opportunities because I was holding out hope that she would come to the light and want to date me. And of course, now we're still friends. And I'm like, not interested at all.
Yep. I did the same thing. That was high school for me, pretty much. High school and junior high, both. And it's awful, you know, like the implicit contract thing will bite you because you're basically connecting yourself to something that the other person doesn't know they're in, and you're killing all your other opportunities. It's, yep.
And you know, I think we've all been through that too. I think most people can relate to that. And I mean, some people are trapped in that cycle, and that's unfortunate. And that's kind of the sad part of it. I did this video a while back that I always point to. It's called "You're Always Going to Be Alone," and it's sort of despondent. But I feel like it's an important message. Like, you have to be okay with that if you want to be if you don't want to be a burden on other people that you're around. You have to be okay with yourself and with the fact that if you're always, quote, alone, and that you all, even when you're in a relationship, you're still going to be, quote, alone. Because, and the reason why I say that is because we kind of start in this world looking for unconditional love, and that doesn't exist. I mean, who's going to unconditionally love you? If you believe in God, God, and other than that, you. And that's it. It doesn't matter. You could have the perfect relationship, perfect, you know, even your kids, even whatever. It's not going to be that ideal that we all want. And so as soon as you get that out of your head and you say, okay, I get this. I understand. I'm technically going to always be alone. I'm not going to get this thing. Life becomes so much better because you stop obligating people. You stop caring so much what people think. You start to like come to the realization that, okay, you know, I don't have, there's not this perfect one. There's not this perfect, you know, thing that person that's going to love me, you know, unconditionally. And you stop being needy. And when you stop being needy, you start being more confident. And then all of a sudden, ironically, all these things you couldn't get before, you can suddenly get, because now you're a person that people want to be around rather than a person that drags other people down because of the neediness, because they can feel that, you know, that you're sucking the energy, taking from them, you know, with those implicit contracts. So I think that's a really important concept that a lot of people, it's a hard pill to swallow. A lot of people don't want to swallow this pill, but once you face this reality, then, you know, life becomes a lot better, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that's a realization I had. And the other one was, you know, that whole thing that longing for unconditional love. It's like, okay, if you get unconditional love, what's the value of your merit?
Right.
it's like, why be a better person at that? You know, and I started just thinking through the downstream consequences of following that worldview. And it was horrendous the more I thought about it.
Yeah, I really like the Stoic kind of thinking, the Stoic philosophy, which essentially says this. It says, stop seeking external validation, stop seeking external fulfillment and joy, and stop seeking anything external. Instead, build up a fortress inside yourself. Become a stronger person. Do things because you want to unleash your full potential. You want to live up to your full potential in life because you want to become stronger. Because that, as opposed to, I'm doing things because I want to get something. Because I want to get something, whether it be money, whether it be affection or love or whatever it is that's external. All of those things are finicky. You know, fate is finicky. Those things can fade away. You don't have direct control over those things. But you always have control over the internal. You always have control over what your mindset is, how you choose to feel, how you choose to interpret situations, what your attitude is, right? The internal character and fortitude that you develop, you have control over for that. And so, and that's what you really need for happiness and fulfillment in life. And so it's really, I love that idea, that Stoic philosophy of this, I'm not going to depend on the external. And that's, you know, that's, to me, that's been one of the biggest shifts that I've made in my life that has made the quality of my life much better than it was before.
I would agree with that. So did you come to that organically, or did somebody throw a copy of Seneca's letters at you?
You know, I had sort of been coming to it on my own, little by little. I didn't know of Stoic philosophy, right? I had been sort of discovering this as I've taken a lot of hard knocks. You know, I tend to be the bushwhacker who goes and, like, you know, chops down the trail for everyone else, and I learned things the hard way. that's how I've learned a lot of things, but eventually I stumbled upon a book by Ryan Holiday called The Obstacle is the Way. And when I read this book, and I read it like three times, I was like, oh, this is like the things I've been discovering in life, but there's actually a philosophy that this is garnered from, which is the Stoic philosophy. And, you know, after I read that book, I instantly was like, oh, I got to get Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, right? And I got that, and I was like, okay, this is pretty good, but what else is there? And then I came across Seneca's letters to Lucidius or whatever.
Yeah, I never can remember, but I always find Seneca. Yeah.
And that, I think that if there is a book that is full of wisdom that is timeless, it's those letters. It is just fantastic. You know, just, it's so deep, so much wisdom in them. But I've become a big fan of that. And that really helped to solidify some of the things. Cause it, you know, a lot of times in life, you come up with sort of a life philosophy, and then it's the moment when you read it somewhere else, or you find it somewhere else, or someone else talks about it, then it solidifies, and then it becomes a real meaningful part of your life. And that's what happened for me. As I was developing this kind of philosophy, this was the reinforcement that I needed to say, oh yeah, this is it, and there's more.
Yeah, that kind of happened to me with Ayn Rand and objectivism.
Oh yes.
So you like long expositions of text? That's your life philosophy.
That John Galt section, that John Galt speech, that was kind of brutal. I love her books though. Just yeah, you know, such a mindset. I feel like, how could you read an Ayn Rand book, you know, especially the Atlas Shrugged, and not have your thinking shifted? Like, how could you disagree with her? Like, it's just so. I don't know. I don't understand. I think people that tend to like say, oh, you know, whatever, and disagree with her, that they haven't actually finished. They got stuck. They saw John Galt's speech and they're like, and they skimmed through the book. But if you've actually read Atlas Shrugged, it has to shift your thinking.
It does. But every time I read it, like, the thing is you start looking around and then you see all that stuff happening.
Oh yeah.
And, oh man.
Of course, I came to Ayn Rand through reading Terry Goodkind's books.
Yeah.
And of course, well, I met him at a book signing and told him I really liked his philosophy in the books. And he said, you really ought to read Ayn Rand.
So you said Terry Goodkind? I'm not familiar with that author.
The Sword of Truth series.
Oh, okay. The Sword of Truth. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm not a big fiction reader, so that's why, but...
He writes fantasy novels with a lot of philosophy in them. Will got me into his books back in college.
It's Atlas Shrugged with swords and magic.
Really? Okay.
Eventually. Yeah. It takes a bit, but...
Okay. So, I may have to, like, go through this now.
Yeah, there's 11 books in the main series.
Okay, yeah.
I've listened to almost all of them.
Oh yeah, I'm a big audiobook. I go to like through probably two audiobooks a week because I'm running like 8 hours. So I listen on 3x speed. So I have to always refresh my audio. I've got this big list. Part of my fears in life is that someday I'll run out of books in my book list that I won't have anything to listen to.
I'm that way with podcasts. I'm a hoarder.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, given that, I think we're kind of running a little bit short on time because I know you had a hard break.
Yeah, I mean, we've managed to go really, really deep in a very short amount. I mean, we've gotten to the point of talking about unconditional love on a podcast. So,
yeah.
So I think we penetrated the core.
Just for the audience, I kind of put together a few situations that can lead to anxiety. These are less notes, more for a discussion. And to start off, I want to talk about social anxiety or awkwardness at work.
Yeah, so like interviews and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, interviews, presentations, meetings, attending them, paying attention, and then even socializing at work or after work. I know John has a really great video on YouTube about socializing at work, and I will include that in the show notes. But let's go ahead and get started, I guess, with talking about interviews.
So there's two things here, two key things, and they're based on what we talked about. Because, see, the relationship model is a really good one for a lot of things, the romantic relationship. But it's confidence, right? So the first thing is this. I always tell developers this. Learn algorithms. Okay, learn data structures and algorithms. Go to TopCoder or Codility or one of those sites where they quit or pick up the book Cracking the Coding Interview and become a master of those. You know what I'm talking about? Those word problem algorithms, like, yeah, you know, reverse this string and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you end up using a hash or, you know, a linked list to solve this or implementing link. Like, master that stuff. And here's why. Because if you master that stuff and then someone says, oh, you know, could you solve this problem? And you're like, I've been waiting. Are you kidding me? I've been waiting for you to ask me this. Like, I've been jumping out of my seat. Just challenge me, dude. Challenge me, right? You're going to be confident, a lot more confident in the interview. What sucks, I mean, I went to the Microsoft interview one time, actually twice, unprepared. Didn't know jack about algorithms. And the first thing they did was have me solve a problem on a whiteboard, a coding problem, and I just froze up and basically stuttered the whole time, right?
Yep.
until they let me out, you know, and mercy killed me, right? So that was awkward. That was bad. But you know what? I went back over the years and I got really good on, I was playing on the site called TopCoder, and I got really good at algorithms. So then I would walk into interviews and I would be like, you know, even a little bit of arrogance because I thought I was the bomb, right? But I would come in definitely with confidence because I know that the hardest thing that they can throw at me is going to be fun. And so that's number one, is master algorithms so that you can have, because that's the hardest thing. That's the thing that makes you sweat the most, is make sure that you've got that. You still have to know more, obviously, than just how to solve algorithms, you know, for most interviews. But, and then the second thing is just do it a lot. Do practice interviews. Interview for jobs you're not even going to take, right? So that you can get comfortable with the interview process. You know, if you've going on your first interview, I don't care who you are, you're going to be nervous and you're going to feel awkward. But if you did at least practice interviews 50 times, maybe you, like, you know, you walk up to someone on the street and say, "Can you interview me?" Right? You know, I'm kidding around, but you can find relatives. Actually, what's probably best is like people that are acquaintances that you don't know really well, because you're going to feel awkward in front of them, and just get over that. Because once you've gone through that a bunch of times, you're going to have confidence. Remember we said the formula, like going to the mall and talking to people, right? You do that 50 times, you're going to build confidence. Same thing here. You know, you got to do it a bunch of times. So do a bunch of interviews, have your algorithms down. You're going to have confidence in both of those areas. You're going to come into an interview and you're going to be impressive because you're not going to be afraid, but it's going to take the courage to get there in order to get the confidence.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think doing the practice is what really helps. The problem that I think a lot of people have is not so much that they haven't practiced doing the problems as much as they get nervous when they have to do those problems in front of people or do those problems on a whiteboard instead of on a computer.
Yep.
And that can, like, cause them to have problems in the interview.
Yeah. And And we can combine them. How about this? How about this for people that are socially awkward, have trouble talking to ladies, and have interview problems? Go to the mall and then look for good looking girls and say, "Hey, I need to practice my interview skills. My name is John, by the way, and I'll tell you what. Do you have like 5 minutes? Could you just interview me real quick? I'm supposed to be like, I'm nervous to do an interview for a job and stuff. So I'm just looking to try to interview in the most awkward situation, which I figured was talking to some, good looking girl at the mall. So would you interview me?" Then there you go. It gives you a perfect opener, and it will be totally awkward as hell. but you'll be exuding confidence by just saying that. So you're going to get some points there, and then you'll be practicing your interview skills.
Yeah, that would do it. That's definitely bold. It's kind of the concept of, I don't know if you've heard of the term, eat the frog.
Yes, Brian Tracy. Yes.
Yeah. If you got to eat a frog, then you might as well do it first thing so that whatever's after that is easier.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. There you go. Eat the frog. I like it.
And this is one I run into is presentations. This is actually kind of, or well, not really presentations, but the possibility of doing public speaking. I've got a bunch of friends in my mastermind group and, social acquaintances that are pushing me to do that. And this is one I'm having trouble with right now is like, what would you do for somebody that is actually going to get in front of a crowd and talk?
I've got a really good one here that I used to do all the time. Now I still do it just because it's fun, but this is a little hack here that will help you. So commit yourself, first of all, right? Just sign up and I'm going to do it. Okay. And force yourself to do it. And then when you get to the room that you're going to speak at, especially if it's a big room, get there about, 5-10 minutes early, 15 minutes, maybe. Walk around the room, feel your way around the stage. And then as people start to trickle into the room, right? And they sit in the front row or people that are sitting near the front, what you're going to do is you're just going to go up to the people that are sitting in the front and you're going to introduce yourself and you're going to say hi and you're going to shake their hand and you're going to talk to as many of the people in the front row before your talk as possible. Now, what's going to happen here is that when you get on the stage, you're not getting on the stage in front of a bunch of strangers. In fact, you're going to have a couple of dynamics that are going to work for you. One, you already know the people in the front row. Those people are cheering for you because everyone feels honored to have the speaker talk to them individually. So no matter what you say, you're not bombing for them. You may bomb for the rest of the room, but those people, they are excited because you gave them the honor of talking to them specifically. So they're cheering for you. So you can have confidence with that. And then also you're just going to feel more confident because you know some of the people, right? And like I said, so that's a little trick that I used to use a lot, and it really will help you to be more comfortable and to be able to give a talk. And then when you're in your talk and you're starting to feel a little nervous or uncomfortable, just make eye contact with some of the people sitting in the front row, because those are the people you already know. They're not the ones that are going to be falling asleep, because sometimes, you're giving a talk and someone's dozing off or something and you're getting nervous because you're like, oh, am I connecting? Is everyone thinking I'm an idiot right now? But so you just like break eye contact with those people and look at the front row, and they're all smiling, they're all cheering you on, and then that helps a lot.
Okay, well, I'll try that.
Yeah, that's actually really good advice. My dad, back when he was preaching, used to do that. He would have a few people in the congregation that he would just, when he would get nervous or be on a point or something that he wasn't 100% sure about, he would have them that he would look to so that he could kind of help keep his focus.
Well, if I think about it, like the times that I've done public speaking that it has worked, that has been what's happened. Like it wasn't intentional. Like I didn't set out with the intent of doing that way, but that's how it organically occurred.
Yep.
So, okay.
Yeah, let me know how it goes.
But, yeah, well, I've got to find something to speak at, but that's...
Yeah, code camps are a good one to get started, or, meetup groups and stuff like that afterwards, and then you can get on the speaking circuit if you really like it. But give it 5 times. 5 times before you decide you like it or not. It's 5 awkward, uncomfortable times. Just don't be afraid to look like an idiot. Just be willing. Take the hit, right? Just know that you're going to take the hit 5 times, right? First time you get up to bat at baseball, you never played baseball before, you don't expect to hit home runs. You don't even expect to hit the ball at all, but you're going to swing, right? And you know that you got to swing a lot of times before you actually get good. So let yourself whiff, let yourself fail, be okay with that, be okay with looking like an idiot, and just realize that that's the entry price. And most people won't make it past five. So if you make it past five, you're going to start to feel comfortable, guaranteed, maybe before then.
Well, guys, that pretty much wraps us up. Before we close everything out, I do want to say thank you to John Sonmez for joining us and talking to us about social awkwardness.
It's been a great interview. We got a lot of really good stuff, and man, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you?
So my home base online is simpleprogrammer.com. And you can go to YouTube and search for Simple Programmer, or go to youtube.com/simpleprogrammer. I put out like 2 to 3 YouTube videos a day. That's where I tend to produce most of my content nowadays. I'm also writing a book called The Software Developer's Ultimate Career Guide, or Ultimate Career Guide for Software Developers. I haven't decided on the title, but you can check that out if you're interested. Just go to simpleprogrammer.com/career guide, and you'll actually get the book sent to you via email like every week free. You know, eventually when I finish it, you can buy it and buy the whole thing in a nice bounded version if you want. But if you want to just get it for free, just sign up there, simpleprogrammer.com/career guide.
Nice. And thank you for coming on again.
Yeah. Thanks very much for coming on. I'm definitely going to be signing up for that. And before we close it out, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, I know a lot of people that have listened to this episode probably are wondering, you know, why these social interactions are so important, you know, as a software developer. And the answer is well, there's a lot of reasons it's really important. Obviously, the existential angst that you're going to feel if things in your life are not working out well from a social perspective is that's going to overshadow the other stuff you do. And we talked about that in the episode. But let's also talk about how appropriate social interactions can affect your code, particularly the amount of it that you have to write. For instance, it's very easy to build systems for different departments to talk to each other who don't want to talk to each other. And a lot of times that's really not entirely necessary. It's very easy to build a protocol around this group of people doesn't want to talk to this other group of people. How do I get data from point A to point B without them having to interact? And I think this is a common fallacy that we run into in software development, is actually using technology to exacerbate the lack of meaningful human communication between different groups. And I'll give you an example. I've worked at several larger companies that were extremely siloed. And so, for instance, the people in accounting might not ever talk to, you know, or like the people that are in accounts receivable, for instance. Let's bring that down a little bit. They might not ever talk to sales. They might not be allowed to talk to sales. And if you build a system that allows those two parties to communicate basically by throwing things over the wall, you're actually making the situation worse. It's essentially a coding mistake it's essentially a social mistake that you are automating through code. And so I want to kind of challenge everybody out there to, when you see this sort of dynamic developing, to try to stop that particular train from, you know, getting on the rails and shift the perspective of the entire conversation to how do these two departments actually communicate analog, real time, face to face. And then figure out how to automate that, not figure out how to automate a dysfunctional social interaction, which is not communicating at all versus, you know, and just throwing things over the wall. I think you'll find that this produces better results. It also will produce less code, because there's a lot of things that you have to spend a lot of effort coding that can really be handled with a face-to-face conversation between two people who like each other. And so don't always solve problems with code. Think about how you can solve it socially, because that really should be part of why you're here, because the opportunity to have, you know, significant material gain for yourself also relies on this. Like if you're fixing coding problems, you are a programmer. If you are fixing organizational communication problems, you can become a C-level executive. You know, it's a gateway to a better life for yourself, and it's frankly better for the people around you. So that's what I got.
Titanfall.
If
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.